The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
A little bit of a repeat from last week for those people who weren't here last week and those people who were. I'm sure a little review could be helpful, and then I'm going to go on. The topic is Kabbalah, and but of course to me, Kabbalah is not an independent study. It's essentially the inside story of Judaism. It enables us to understand the real basics and the inner dynamics at the core of Jewish living. So, and the Kabbalah has its own language. However, the problem is that people get stuck in the language and don't translate the language to the experiential meaning that it has. And unfortunately, it's kind of as silly as, you know, imagine someone trying to understand a piece of music philosophically. It's not a philosophical work, it's music. It's not something you read, it's something you play. So too, the teachings of the Kabbalah is not something that you read. It's also not something that you actually study. It's something that you experience. Of course, you study it in order to experience it. I mean, obviously, we are talking, we are learning. But the learning points to an experience in our lives, and that's what's really important about it really turning into a learning. And so the Kabbalah speaks a metaphorical language, and there are actually different opinions amongst the teachers of Kabbalah whether we should translate the metaphor into a philosophical language or leave it as a metaphor. And I would say the reason why there is even a conflict about this is because what could happen is when you translate the metaphor into a philosophical language, you stand the risk of beginning to think that you understand what you're studying, and you forget that it's meant to be a metaphor to lead you to experience. In other words, even philosophy is a metaphor. Every word we use is a metaphor. Water is just a noise that points to an experience with a liquid that comes out of our, you know, our tap. And if a person were thirsty and they asked you for water and you then with a serious face turned to them and said water, obviously you would not quench their thirst. And to me, this is one of the great challenges of Jewish education today, is too many rabbis and educators are trying to, you know, quench the thirst of Jews with words, when these words are really only pointers to an experience that each person has to find for themselves, or things like, you know, these retreats help make those experiences a lot more available. But as the saying goes, you can bring a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink. So here's the metaphor, and we're going to look at the metaphor. We're going to try and appreciate the metaphor a little bit more on a philosophical, psychological level. But bottom line, we need to go to the experience that it's really pointing to. The beginning of the Kabbalah starts like this. In the beginning, all of existence was endless light. In other words, the Kabbalah is teaching us that the foundation, the root, the ground, the essence, the context, the content of all is endless light. So the question is, what is this light? So first of all, the Kabbalah has a disclaimer. The disclaimer is that we never talk about God. We only talk about God as so revealed to us. God is appearing to us. The truth is, science says the same thing. Science will no longer say this is what an atom is, but rather how an atom appears to us. In other words, there's a fundamental attitude that what we talk is really relative to us. It can only be relative to us. We're not talking about truth from God's perspective. We don't have God's perspective, because we'd have to be God to do that. But really, God from our perspective. Therefore, the Kabbalah is very careful to only talk about not the endless one, but rather the endless light. With that in place, now the question, of course, then is, well, so what is this light? Okay, the light is God is so revealed to us, God is so appears to us, God is we understand relative to us. Okay, but what is the nature of this light? So this light, we are taught, is endless. It's limitless. It transcends all, and it fills all. It's the context, it's the content, it's the root, it's the ground, it's the essence of all. This light transcends time and space, because this light existed before all time and all space. And therefore, since this light, it transcends, existed before the limitations of time and space, that would mean that this light can fill every moment while being beyond every moment. This light can fill every point in space while being beyond every point in space. This light is within everyone and yet beyond everyone. Do you understand why? Because, you see, we think in terms of time and space. So what is now cannot be later, right? It's either now or it's later. What is here cannot be there. It's either here or there. But that which transcends the limitations of space means the conditions of space in no way confine it. And therefore, this light, this endless light, is within every moment and yet beyond every moment, within every point in space and yet beyond space, within each and every one of us and yet beyond each and every one of us. And the Kabbalah teaches us that all of Judaism is only about this light. What we say, what we think, what we do determines whether we increase this light in our life or whether we decrease this light in our life. It's as if we have a dimmer switch in our hands and we could turn the light up or turn the light down. So now the question that we addressed is, so what could this light be? Right? What is the manifestation of God? What could be the root, ground, essence, context of all that transcends time, that transcends space? What could be the cause of all and the purpose of all? And the answer is unconditional love. The manifestation of God is unconditional love. I'm not saying that God is love, but God, as so revealed to us, so to speak, the light of God is unconditional love. And that makes sense, right? Unconditional love is the root of all. It's the cause of all. It's the purpose of all. It's the theme of all. It's the essence of all. And bottom line, only love is real. That's what we're learning from the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah teaches us in the beginning all of existence was endless light, a manifestation of God. But what is this light? This light is unconditional love. So when a person feels unconditional love in their heart, feels or experiences unconditional love coming from another person, when a person is in an environment where they feel embraced by, that there is an atmosphere, that the air they're breathing is unconditional love, this is the presence of God in our lives. So when a person talks about the presence of God, it's not some old man with a long flowing beard in heaven who decided to come on earth and enter into our homes. But rather, when we talk about the presence of God in our lives, we're really talking about love. And, you know, the scientists all have, but many of the scientists devoted their life to discover what's the substance of life. What are we all made of? Substance coming from meaning substance, that which beneath it all. That which stands beneath all is the substance. And they have decided that the substance of life is energy. We are all made of energy. But we can now understand from the Kabbalah that the substance of life is love. We are all made of love. We are all here because of love. We are all here to manifest love. Love is the light of God. And therefore, when we talk about this light being endless, we understand that love is endless, because you never get enough love. You can never say, oh, we did it. I love you. You love me. Done. Right? That would be the end of a relationship. What's beautiful about love is it's endless. Right? Love is not a destiny, it's a journey. So the endless light of God, when we experience that light, it really is love. Endless light is just a noise we make. Now, you've got to go find it in your life, and that is when that love comes in your life, when that yearning for love in your life. And essentially, there's three, you know, aspects to the manifestation of this love. It is the love that one has for God, it is the love that one has for themselves, and it's the love that one has for other people. That's what it's about. So, this endless light is really unconditional love. It's the foundation, it's the root, it's the context, it's the essence of all. And it transcends time and space. Because love transcends time and space. I mean, I'm sure we've all experienced the moment where we were in the presence of someone and we were so involved, we were so immersed in that moment that there was no time. We would look at our watch and suddenly be shocked to say, oh my God, this couldn't be. We met at 8 o'clock and it's already 5 in the morning. It feels like minutes went by. When you have that experience, you have had a taste of that endless light. Love transcends space. The Talmud says that if a couple love each other, then they can sleep on a bed which is the size of a razor blade, meaning the edge of a razor blade. In other words, if a couple love each other, then they are able to sleep on the edge of a razor blade. Space has no bearing on them. But when a couple do not love each other, then if their bed is as wide as the universe, it'll be too small for them. Love transcends space. When you love somebody, it doesn't matter how big your house is. It doesn't matter how big the bedroom is, right? Love transcends space. You know, I've met people who live in these mansions, these kids who can't wait to get out of their parents' home. And you say, why? And they say, man, like I need my space, man. Like, you know, like I need my space. I mean, these homes are numbers of floors high, and yet this child feels choked. Because if it's a home that does not have the presence of God, that doesn't have the presence of love, then it'll never be big enough. But I've been in homes, in fact, one of my teachers had, I believe, 18 children, maybe 14, but who's counting, right? I used to go to his home. It was a tiny, tiny place in a little area here in Jerusalem. He had three bedrooms, one for the boys, one for the girls, and one for him and his wife. And, I mean, again, you have to understand, these bedrooms were really tiny, and the beds were set in such a way that they would fold up out of the wall. Like, how do you put, like, you know, like 9 beds in this tiny room? They would pull out, like, drawers and fold down from the ceilings. It was unbelievable. And I want you to know, you'd walk into this home, and you'd feel incredible space. You would feel abundance, right? You would just feel abundance because the presence of God, which is the presence of love, the light of God, the light of love, is there. You know, I share with you the story of the Baal Shem Tov that was traveling, and he was in a wagon, and the wagon was filled with his students, and they were cramped in there like sardines, and he saw a fellow on the street who needed a lift, so he stopped his driver and said to this fellow, hop in. And the guy looked at him and says, are you sure there's space? I said, of course there's space. All we have to do is love each other just a little bit more, and there will be plenty of space. This, by the way, was what mysteriously and miraculously happened in the temple. It says, on Yom Kippur, everyone was packed into Temple Mount, but when the Kohen Gadol would say the special name of God, which is not allowed to be pronounced any other year, any other day of the year by any other person, suddenly everyone would drop to the floor and bow. And everyone would have about 8 feet radius of space around them. How's that possible? Suddenly there was such an influx of that endless light, that loving presence, that they transcended space. So therefore, the Kabbalah teaches that in the beginning all of existence was endless light, and that endless light is endless love. And that light is the ground, the essence, the context, the source, the root, the purpose of all. And that light transcends space, transcends time. That light is endless. And that light is the light of love. So therefore, what is, and you know, and as we mentioned, that love transcends time and space, therefore that light can be 100% here and 100% there. And as I shared last time, we learned that really, that's the power of love. When my children, my first daughter was born, I just loved her to death, and then, not to death, but, and then when we had our second child, I worried, how would I split my love? 50% this one, 50% that one. The mystery of love, again, because it is the presence of God, is that you can 100% love all your children, right? And it doesn't detract from any other of your children. When it says in Judaism that we are created in the image of God, it really means that we are created in the image of love. And that's exactly what it says in the Torah. Because it says that God created man and woman in His image. In His image He created them. The image of God is not a man, and the image of God is not a woman. The image of God is the union of these two opposites. That's why when you're at a wedding, a Jewish wedding, there is a bracha, a blessing that is recited under the chuppah, under the canopy, which is, blessed be you, God, who's created the human being in your image. Why would we say that blessing under a canopy? Why not say that when a baby's born? Because you don't see the image of God until you see the image of love. When two opposites unite in the mysterious power that transcends duality, that is the image of God. And what really is our purpose on earth? Our purpose on earth is to serve God, and to serve God means to serve love. When we are truly loving each other, and that is a lot more complicated than it might sound, which we will talk about in upcoming talks, there are 10 ingredients to truly loving someone. But right now, to serve God means to serve love. When we talk about making love, that's actually a misnomer. You don't make love, you only reveal love. The love in your heart and the love in my heart is not our love. We didn't invent it. We didn't instill it within ourselves. We didn't instill within others the need for it. We didn't teach others to recognize it. Love is the presence of Hashem, the presence of God. We don't make love, we reveal love. We channel love. When we love another person, we are serving God. How so? We are serving to be a channel for God's presence in the world. When we love ourselves, when we love God, we are serving to be a channel for God's presence in the world. So essentially what the Kabbalah is teaching us is that the theme of life is love. All you need is love. Love is all you need. But it's not easy. Because if the theme of life is unconditional love, then how would unconditional love be revealed? Precisely in a world where the conditions are against love. This is a very important point. Love is a labor. Unconditional love is manifest when the conditions are precisely against love, and I'm able to transcend those conditions and show love. Right? I mean, if my boss is easy to get along with, so that's not the greatest manifestation of love. Of course I love him. I have no reason not to love him. But if my boss is really annoying, very temperamental, very moody, right? And yet I transcend the conditions, and I nonetheless demonstrate love to him. Wow, that becomes an incredible service of love. And our children. If our children were easy to love, that would not be the greatest manifestation of God's presence on earth. Because the greatest manifestation of unconditional love, once again, is demonstrating love when the conditions are against it. So therefore, when our children are difficult, that's precisely an amazing opportunity to show love. When our spouses are annoying, Now comes the real opportunity of love. If we were in a world where there was no conflict, where there were no problems, where everybody was easy to love, such a world would not be filled with the presence of God. So precisely the world we live in, with all its problems and its conflicts, is precisely the perfect world for the revelation of the perfect unconditional love, the presence of God's love in the world. Therefore, we need to realize and expect daily challenges to love. And if there are no challenges to your love, then your love isn't the highest. Right? Your love isn't the highest. Therefore, when couples have problems, they need to understand, now the love begins. Until the problems happen, this is easy. Right? When people fall in love, that's not love. I think the same as you. I love what you love. Yeah, that's an illusion. Right? Real love really happens in an atmosphere of great challenge. Right? The only marriage made in heaven is the one you work at on earth. That's the only marriage that is made in heaven. It's made in heaven and assembled on earth with much, challenge. And that's, my wife was very involved with astrology. Before she embraced Judaism, that's a whole other story about astrology and Judaism. But at the time, she used to do people's astrological maps, and she was very, very good. But even though she wasn't religious, she refused to counsel people regarding possible matches. And because what you can do in astrology is you can take a person's map and then place it on the map of the potential spouse and see if there is something called squares. A square is where there are going to be problems, and it's absolutely incredible. I mean, you can see it in your own map. Where there's a square is where you have problems in your life. So what people do is they'll go to an astrologist, they'll take the map of someone they're dating, and they want to see, are there going to be a lot of squares, which essentially means a lot of points of contention and conflict. My wife would never do that because her attitude was, perhaps that's exactly what God wants. People think if there are no points of conflict, well, then that would be the perfect match. But it's just the opposite. That would be a boring marriage. Where would we really get to know each other? Where would we really be able to dig in deep inside ourselves and reveal the presence of God, the light of unconditional love, if there were no problems, if there were no challenges? And this is, thinking about Israel. Why, if we are the chosen people, and this is the promised land, why is this the land where so much hate and so much conflict and so much war happens in the world? Because from this place, the light of God, the light of love will emerge. And therefore, it's precisely in a place that is war-ridden, it's precisely there that love, the presence of God, needs to become manifest and will become manifest to the world. So it's important to understand that it's not the problems that destroy marriages. It's the unwillingness to embrace the problems and see them as opportunities, see them as really the glue that will bring us even closer. Now, what's interesting, however, is that really the Kabbalah is describing love as a light, right? In the beginning, all of existence was an endless light. And that endless light is a metaphor for endless love, unconditional love. But why would light be a metaphor for love? Because generally people say love is blind, but that's not true. Judaism says love is seeing, right? When you have the eyes of love, when you look at the world in the light of love, then you see what's real, you see what's possible. You see the opportunity for miracles in the world. So the truth is, what is light? Light, although you can't see light, it's that which enables you to see. So too, love is what enables you to see. So when a person looks at the world in the light of hate, then they just don't see what's real, and they don't see what matters. And when a person looks at the world in the light of love, right, then they reveal God, and whereby it is really hate that conceals God, conceals what's real. So, I like that, conceals what's real. So, this is so fundamental to Judaism, it kills me that this is not being taught in schools. Because I wasn't taught that Judaism is about love. I always thought Christianity was about love and Judaism wasn't. Right? But here it is absolutely clear from the Kabbalah, but we don't need even the Kabbalah, we can go into the verses of the Torah. It's about love, it's for the purpose of love, and to serve God means to serve love. The more we bring love in the world, the more we bring the presence of God in the world, the more we're able to see what's real and make choices based on what's real rather than make choices based on living in the darkness. Right? Again, as I mentioned before, unconditional love, for it truly to be unconditional, it would mean that the conditions are there that really challenges our love. I would say if there's any people in the world who challenge of love for God is the greatest, it's us. Right? If there's any people in the world that could have good reasons to forget about God and hate God, I would say we're that people who've got much that we could point to. I think that's important to understand, that if you were being casted in a drama and the drama was about unconditional love, then what would we expect happen to the character in this drama? We'd expect that if this character is supposed to be and access the ultimate experience of that shining light of unconditional love, they would probably suffer many, many, many challenges to that love. And that's what happened to Job, right? Job in the end says, you know, no matter what you do to me, your closeness to me is more precious than anything. And that's it. You know, and Job really is the epitome of one who continues to maintain his love for God, his love for life, in the worst of worst conditions.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.